Hey, it's good to see you today, and it's great to be here, especially as we start this, as Joel mentioned, this new ministry year together, or perhaps campus pastor mentioned that. And before I jump into today's message, though, I have to make a comment about last week, and I don't usually do this, but I feel like I have to. Last week, if you were here, was undoubtedly the most difficult message I've ever prepared or ever delivered. And if you were here, we talked about divorce and remarriage. And I was trying to think of an analogy. I think the best way to describe how I felt was years ago, I went camping with my kids, and my son Andrew, my oldest son, sliced his hand open with a knife I gave him that I should have probably not given him. He was pretty young, but it's like, here's a knife, you know, be a man, kill a lion or something. I don't know. Sliced his hand. So I drive him into Clayton late that night, and I knew he's going to have to get stitches, and I know what's about to happen, but I don't dare tell him. And I knew that this doctor, Dr. Hahn, interestingly enough, in Clayton, he's still there, was going to have to give him a shot of Novocaine, of course, right in the slice to deaden it, to stitch him up. I didn't tell him that. So here I'm taking my son, who I love, you know, more than life, laying him out there, and I see the doctor getting the Novocaine ready, and I realize I'm going to have to hold Andrew down. Whew. So, of course, you do that because you love your kids, and you know you got to sew it up, and your son's looking at you like, I thought you loved me, and here you are. This is, you know, this is the most dreadful thing I've ever experienced in my life, you know, and I got tears, and he's got tears, and anyway. So last week, as I approached the weekend, that's exactly how I felt. I thought, I love our church so much, and I love the families in our church so much, and I so want you to be healed, but I felt like I brought the needle, and I held you down, and some of you didn't know what you were into, and it was just so excruciatingly painful. But I just appreciate so much the fact that we have a church where we can talk about those things. So here's what happened. Got lots of good email, got a little response and some questions. I got an extraordinary letter that we're going to post somewhere with the message. And if last week left you a little bit open-ended and a little bit disturbed and a little bit, yeah, but what's now? I want you to read this letter because I think this letter, and it's something that took place in the life of one of our families last week after the message, I think it kind of brings everything together more than anything else. So we'll let you know about that and post that for you. And if you have friends who are remarried or friends who are divorced, about to be divorced, I would highly recommend you point them toward this resource because it's such a big deal. But primarily, I just want to say thank you for creating a church or a group of churches where we can even talk about that kind of stuff. So anyway, just wanted to say thanks. Want to let you know I'm sensitive to the angst that I created last week. I hated to do it, but I needed to do it. I wanted to do it, and I'm so glad it's over. I mean, this weekend was like, wow. Anyway, so today, today's kind of a one-off message. I just want to talk about something specific. The next week, we launch this brand new series, Recovery Road. I'm very excited about that. But to kind of get into today's message, let me say this. As a pastor, there are always things that I wish, and every pastor feels this way, there are always things I wish I could just push a magic button and everybody in the church would automatically experience. I wish that all of you would be able to sit over here to my left and to your right, depending on what auditorium you're in, and watch someone you know be baptized and tears run down your face and, you know, yell and scream and cheer, and to know that you had a personal part in somebody coming to faith. I wish that for all of you, because when you experience that once, it's just absolutely incredible. I wish that all of you who have questions would go through Starting Point. I wish I could just push a button and all of you who kind of go away week after week with the same questions and sort of stiff-arming God and the church a little bit, I just think, oh, if you just go through Starting Point. For those of you who are like mature believers, you've been a Christian for 10 or 15 years or more, I would push the button and make you all lead a Starting Point group, because we need so many mature leaders who are willing to get in there and grapple with the issues that people bring and the questions people bring. I just wish that on you. I wish that everybody in our church would be completely open-handed to God with everything they possess. I wish we had a church full of people whose possessions did not possess them. I wish that we could release a wave of generosity out of our churches that so overwhelms what happens in churches and so gets the attention of our community and our city and our country that people be like, what is up with those churches? Look at their generosity. And we're better than we've ever been, but we're still not there yet. I just pushed that button where everybody would just give first, save second, live on the rest, and get out of debt. You know, give first, save second, live on the rest, get out of debt. I just wish that for you. So those are also my wishes. But the thing I want to talk about today is the other thing I wish for you. If I could push a button, one of the things that would be true of all of us would be that you would be in some sort of structured community. some sort of structured community with other Christians, some sort of structured small group with Christians doing life together so that as things come along, good things, bad things, there's things to rejoice about, things to be excited about, I would push a button and put all of you in a small group. I'd put all of your children in a small group, all of your middle schoolers in a small group, all of your high schoolers in a small group, all of our singles in a small group, and all of our couples in a small group. Because this is, we think at the end of the day, circles are better than rows. In fact, let's just say that together. Circles are better than rows. Yeah, face to face is better than all of your faces looking at me. We just believe that. In fact, the only numeric goals we've ever set for this church, the only numeric goals have been in the area of small group, trying to get more and more people into circles rather than rows. And if I could push a button and put you in a meaningful, multiplying, you know, two or three times a month, face to face, in lives with other people, praying together, opening God's word together, and for your kids, I would just do that in a heartbeat, because at the end of the day, that's where growth happens, that's where life happens, that's where accountability happens, a sense of belonging, and a sense of care. And so today, for just a few minutes, I want to talk about one, there's 20, I just want to talk about one of the primary reasons why that is so extraordinarily important. And as we begin this new ministry year together, this is the best time of the year to take that step, either back into community, back into small group, or to take a chance and to take a risk to get into small group for the very first time. And the compelling reason I'd like to try to bring to you today comes from something that Jesus said. Here's something Jesus said. This is not a verse that you'll ever find on a calendar, okay? This isn't a happy, cheerful verse. This is nobody's life verse that you look at every day. Here's what Jesus said. Jesus said to his disciples, his closest followers, things that cause people to stumble are bound to come. Well, there's just a happy thought. Let's write that down. Thank you. Cheer me up. Yeah, things that cause people to stumble are bound to come, but woe to anyone through whom they come. So Jesus looks at the people he loves the most and he says, let me just give you a heads up about life. Eventually, you're gonna stumble over something. Now when you stumble over something, it's because you didn't see it, right? If we saw it, we wouldn't stumble. And Jesus says, I just gotta give you a heads up. As you go along your life, things that cause people to stumble, things that potentially will cause you to stumble, they're just going to be there. In the Greek writers, in the way that Koine Greek and Attic Greek, they always would put the most important word first in a sentence. This is kind of where Yoda speak comes from. Remember Yoda? Okay. So the literal translation of this verse in Greek, I thought it'd just be fun to look at. It would say this: impossible it is. Doesn't that sound like Yoda? Impossible it is. Impossible it is for stumbling blocks not to come. That's what Jesus said. Impossible. That's what he emphasizes. You need to know. No matter how long you've been a Christian, no matter how long your kids have been a Christian, your kids are in Christian school, your kids aren't in Christian school, you know, you may be preacher's kids, you know, you may be missionaries, I don't know. He says, it's impossible. It's impossible for you to live this life without there being things you don't see thrown at your feet that have the potential to trip you up. It's a promise Jesus made. It's just going to happen. And the little word, you know, things that cause people to stumble literally means a trap. It's like something that traps you. But he uses it figuratively. Jesus is talking about those things, those people, those relationships, that whatever, that blindside us. And next thing we know, something's happened to our faith. Next thing we know, something's happened to our intimacy with God. Next thing we know, we're just not quite as involved in the religious community or the church community anymore. In fact, sort of the full length figurative way that he's talking about this, or if I could define it, it would be this right here. Anything, things that cause people to stumble, are anything that leads one to act contrary to a proper course of action or a set of beliefs. That's kind of the technical version of our definition of the kinds of things that cause us to stumble. Now, this isn't new information. In fact, if you grew up in church, you have your own version of this, right? You grew up in church and then, you know, you stumbled out, right? And there's lots of things that cause us to stumble. But the thing I want you to hear today is, as smart as you are, and you're smart, as mature as you are, and you're so mature, as spiritual as you are, some of you are so mature, spiritual, as much Bible as you know, and some of you know more Bible than I do, in spite of all of that, Jesus says, it's impossible for you to get through life and without at some point in your life or points in your life, something being thrown in your way that has the potential or that will cause you to stumble. And again, if you used to go to church and then you got out of church and you're back, you have your own version of this, right? Because you stumbled out. Sometimes it's ideas. Some of us, we went off to college in our freshman year, somebody gave us some new ideas, and these new ideas, this new worldview, things they didn't talk about in Sunday school or church, things your parents had no answer to. New information, you know, we're given new information, and it caused you to kind of stumble, not kind of, caused you to stumble out of church, stumble out of any kind of belief or maybe faith in God. I think for most of us, when we think about our past and our history, we would say the thing that caused us to stumble or to stumble away were people, friendships, move to a new city, different set of friends, different values. What was important to you in your hometown wasn't important to this group. You know, church was a regular part of your growing up, and suddenly you're surrounded with people who are like, Sunday church, are you kidding? That's just not what we do. And it didn't seem to bother them, and after a while it didn't bother you, and the next thing you knew, you just sort of stumbled out of church because of friends. In fact, some of you have friends right now and you're here and they're not here, and if you're really, really honest, they're kind of the stumbling block. And maybe you're in love, or maybe you're infatuated, or maybe you've moved in and there's some tension. But the truth is, they are the thing that has taken you by surprise. And you're one of those people who thought, not me, not me. I will never abandon God. I'll never abandon my faith. I'll always be kind of a church person. I'll always have a, you know, personal relationship with God. And somebody came along. Some bodies came along. The other thing that eventually causes so many of us to stumble is wealth. It's money. You've heard of the phrase, the deceitfulness of riches. You've heard that before? The deceitfulness of riches. And you know what the deceitfulness of riches is? The deceitfulness of riches is that riches deceive you. It's not really complicated. It deceives some of you into thinking you're smarter than you are. In our American culture, we think the more money a person has, the smarter they are. You know that's not true, right? But if you think it is, it's because you've been deceived by riches. Money doesn't make you smart. We all know some really unwise, dumb, rich people, and we know some really, really smart, not so rich people, don't we? But wealth is deceitful. Jesus said it's harder for a rich man to get into the kingdom of God than a poor person. And when he said that, his disciples were like, wait a minute, but if they're rich, that means God blessed them. What do you, and Jesus is going, oh, you just don't understand wealth. But with wealth comes opportunity, doesn't it? With wealth comes options. The problem with poverty is the lack of options. The problem with wealth is too many options. One of the verses that I pray constantly, not every day, but you know, two or three times a week in my prayer routine comes from Proverbs 30, and it says this. It says, keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Because the writer of Proverbs knew that wealth is a distraction, that wealth brings options, that wealth is one of those good things that has the potential to become the stumbling block. The flip side of it is hard times. A hard time can be a stumbling block, can't it? Because difficult times ding our faith, don't they? Difficult times wonder, has God given up on me? Difficult times cause us to wonder, is God even there? Is God listening to my prayers? Why is it that I had a pretty wrinkle-free life and then all of a sudden things fell apart and I prayed harder than I've ever prayed and I went to church more consistently than I ever went to church and I read my Bible more than I've ever read my Bible before and things got worse rather than better? The difficult times can be the stumbling block. But Jesus' point is this. He doesn't really tell us what they are. He just says, look, it is impossible for you. It is impossible for you to get through your life without things being thrown in your way that have the potential to cause you to stumble. And you know what? I don't think I have to convince you of that because most of us have lived long enough to know that we've stumbled. Now, let me ask you the question, then we'll move on. Do you think, because I just want to make sure you've got your arms around this, do you think it's possible that there's something out there maybe that you've never encountered? Or that maybe you could encounter again. Is it possible, you think, for there to be something thrown in your way that would cause you to stumble out of your relationship with God, out of your faith, away from what you currently believe and embrace? Do you think there's something out there that could be thrown in your way that would cause you to stumble away from your values, away from the things that you're committed to? And it doesn't really matter how you answer the question because the answer is yes. Let me ask you this. Do you think there are things that could be thrown in front of your middle schoolers, your teenagers, your children, that could cause them to stumble away from their faith, stumble away from their values, stumble away from the things that you've taught them, tried to instill in them as parents? Do you think there are things that could be thrown in the front of your kids that would cause them to stumble out of church, stumble away from God, stumble away from their accountability to their Heavenly Father? And if you're a parent, you're going, oh yeah, I absolutely believe that. It scares me to death, Andy, when I look at our culture and I look at our schools and I look at our society. I mean, I see things being thrown in front of my kids all the time, and I'm constantly having those, okay, son, you know, if you don't forget, you know, don't forget this, and honey, and we got to have conversation, and watch out for this and watch out for that. And Andy, when I talk to my kids and I try to get them to, you know, get concerned about these stumbling blocks, they look at me like, Mom, Dad. And I think God looks at us that way sometimes. I think we talk about things sometimes in church, and I get up here and I'm like, pay attention, and we're like, that's not going to happen to me. And I think our Heavenly Father goes, oh, you don't know. Every single one of you, me included, every single one of us, there's something out there that if thrown in our way at an inopportune time has the potential to take us out when it comes to our faith, take us out when it comes to our personal relationship with God, take us out in terms of our confidence in God. And Jesus promises that. He says, hey, these things are going to come. Impossible it is for you not to at some point encounter a stumbling block. So here's the connection. Here's why this is so important as it relates to my desire for all of us to be in circles. You see, it is easy to stumble out of church. Because church is an attendance thing. Church is a habit thing. I think I'll sleep in today. I think I stayed out too late. You know, I think I'll go next week. I mean, all of us probably could tell a story about a stage in our life where we stumbled out of church, and it's easy to stumble out of church. It is easy to stumble out of a faith, or out of belief. I mean, just some information, a bad experience, I mean, too many distractions. It's easy to stumble out of faith. It's easy. It is easy to stumble out of your personal relationship with God. You know, just, I don't read my Bible as much. I don't pray as much. You know, I quit hanging. You know, it's easy to stumble out. But here's the thing. It is almost impossible to stumble out of community. It's almost impossible to stumble out of a group. If you're with a group of people who are connected and doing life together and you're in each other's face in a positive way and you're praying together and you're asking the difficult questions and you're opening God's word together, I'm telling you, it is next to impossible to stumble out of that because it is relational and it's tangible and people are paying attention to what's going on in your life. It's kind of like family, except for this. When you stumble, when something's thrown in front of us that causes us to stumble in our faith, stumble in our relationship with God, the last group of people we will listen to is who? Family. Some of you wives know this because your husband, he's distracted now. And there's this girl at work or there's this group or this group he travels with. Or suddenly it's, you know, golf is more important than Sunday morning church. And you're seeing this happen. And you've tried to talk to your husband and he's just not going to listen to you. Here's why. Because when stumbling blocks are thrown in front of us, when that inevitable stage of life comes where we stumble, we don't listen to family. We don't listen to our parents. Thought I'd get an amen. And we don't listen to our husbands and we don't listen to our wives. And this is why it is so extraordinarily important that you be in some kind of regular, predictable, structured community because it's almost impossible to stumble out of community. And when we stumble, we do not listen to our families. You know that. Now, the wisest man who ever lived other than Jesus is Solomon. And Solomon, he said a lot of incredible things that he didn't apply himself. In fact, it's so interesting. Solomon gives us the reason that Solomon screwed up, even though he didn't know it. He gave us the reason before he didn't take his own advice. And what he said was extremely wise and extremely practical and extremely important. And then he became a case study for what happens when you don't do the things that Solomon said to do. Now, before you're too critical of Solomon, some of you fathers and mothers have done the same things with your own kids, haven't you? And then when your kids came back around and quoted you to you, don't you love that? But Mom, you always said, and you looked at them and you said, well, honey, when you're older, you'll understand, which doesn't make any sense. But anyway, they already understood. Okay, that's just what parents say. Here's what Solomon said. He said this. Two, you may have read this before. This is in the book of Ecclesiastes, one of my favorite books, but you shouldn't read it till after you're 40 or you'll think it shouldn't even be in the Bible. Two are better than one. This is quite an amazing verse because this was written thousands of years ago, and the insight is amazing. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. That even thousands of years ago, they recognized that one person can do one man's work, but if you put another man with a man, two men can actually do three people's work. There's a synergy that happens. You know, what one, you know, oxen could pull, you put another oxen with them, two oxen could pull the load of three times the first oxen, or four times, because of the principle of synergy. So Solomon begins this discussion by saying, okay, if two people, two oxen, two anything are better than one because you have a good return. You have a better return on your labor. And then he says this, if they fall down or stumble, there's our word. If they fall down, they can help each other up. So if you're walking side by side with somebody and one or both of you fall down, he says you can help each other up. And he's sort of doing this kind of metaphorical thing. He doesn't really give us, you know, specifics about why did they fall down. He's just saying in general, if you walk with someone and you stumble and fall, if you're walking with someone, someone's there to help you up. And then here's kind of the contrast or the kicker. But, and this is our world. This is your teenager's world. This is your middle schooler's world. This is your fifth grader's world. This is your freshman and college student's world. This is your world. This is single after being married for a long time and now you're kind of freewheeling it and this is your world. This is all of our world. But look what he says. But pity those who fall and have no one to help them up. But pity those who fall. And when they fall, when they stumble, there is no one there to help them up. Now, in my world, in our world, church world, the most difficult phone calls we get, the most difficult phone calls, and I'm not talking about medical difficult, I'm just talking about relational difficult. The most difficult phone calls we get are when people call and they say, I need someone to help me with my 16-year-old. I need someone to help me. My husband, I think he's lost his mind. He's running around. I don't know what to do. So I need help with my wife. I feel like my wife, she's drinking too much or she's too many prescription drugs and I've tried to talk to her. I need help. When people call us and they say, I need help. Someone I loved has stumbled. They've fallen. Someone that I love has stumbled out of faith. Somebody I love has stumbled into a habit. Somebody I love has stumbled into a self-destructive behavior. Somebody I love has stumbled. Will you help me? The first question we ask is this. This is the first question we ask. Are you in a group? And they're like, it seems like such a strange question when you call the church and you're in crisis. Are you in a group? And the reason we ask that question is this. After doing this for 16 years, here's what we know from experience. Here's what many of you know. Here's what we hear from baptism stories just about every single time. When an individual, a couple, or a teenager, or a middle schooler, or a child is in a group, we know there is someone there to help them up even when they won't listen to mama, daddy, their husband, or their wife. So we always say, are they in a group? And 99 times out of 100, these people say no. Because if the answer had been yes, they wouldn't even have to call us. We get letter, after email from people all the time who say, I went through this difficult time and my group came around me. My son went through this thing and his small group leader was there. My daughter went through a difficult time and before I even got there, I showed up at the school, her small group leader was there. Why? Because we've built into our system a system where when people fall, there is someone there to help them get up. Because Solomon, the wisest person in the world who stumbled himself and no one was there to help Solomon get up because he was so wealthy and so powerful and he did what most wealthy and powerful people did. He became so autonomous and so a person to his own. There was no one who had access to him. And yet the wisest man in the world says, pity the person who stumbles and falls and no one has access. Pity the person who stumbles and falls and no one is so relationally connected to them they can stop and help them stand back up. So the tragedy in our world and in our ministry world is for men and women to just be doing life thinking, I don't need that. I don't have time for that. I have a busy schedule. I have sports things to go to. You know, I'm in school. I have friends. I don't need new friends. And then they stumble and fall. And there's no one who has the integrity of relationship, access to, doing life with, that can come alongside and say, hey, you stumbled. Now, here's the deal. When people stumble morally, they don't want to be helped back up, do they? When people stumble out of family because they got distracted, they don't even want to be helped back up. No, I'm fine right here, laying here on the ground. Just leave me alone, okay? I like it down here. It's safer. Can't fall, okay? I'm loaded. I don't know, you know. Here's the thing. When we stumble in the ways we're talking about, or you stumble out of faith because you read some book or some professor explained how, you know, the Bible's this or that. When we stumble, we don't even want people to help us back up. That's why our families are almost useless. We do not listen to our parents. We do not listen to our husbands. We do not listen to our wives. Pity the man, pity the woman, pity the fourth grader, pity the middle schooler, pity the high schooler, pity the college freshman who, when they stumble, they are not connected to anyone who has access, has the relational skills, and has the relational stick-to-itiveness, and has the relationship to stop and say, you know what? I'm gonna stand here and pull and pull and pull. We are gonna come around you, and we are not going to let you stay down. Pity the individual who doesn't have that. Because here's the deal, if you go to the next slide. When you stumble, what you will need the most is what you will desire the least. Is when you stumble, what you need most will be the thing you want or desire the least. That when you stumble because you got distracted because you had too much, when you stumble because your faith took a ding because things went bad, when you stumble because you got involved with somebody you shouldn't have got, the last thing you're going to want is for somebody to stop and help you back up. But it will be the thing you need the most. And if you have not laid the groundwork relationally, if you have not gotten so connected to some people who can be there for you and refuse, and I'm telling you, I've been in some of these situations, who refuse to go away, I'm going to keep calling you, I'm going to be obnoxious, we're going to come to your house if you don't come to ours, we are not going to let you lay there in your disconnectedness and your sin and the things that you know that are ultimately going to ruin and erode your relationships at home, we're just not going away. Pity the individual that doesn't have that. But listen, when you need it, you're not going to want it. And when you need it, you're not going to seek it out. And when you need it, you're not going to initiate it. That's why we want you in a group. Because the best preparation you can make, or one of some of the best preparation you can make for the inevitability of stumbling blocks coming, is to be connected relationally. Because you can stumble out of church, you can stumble out of your quiet time, you know, routine, you can stumble out of faith, you can stumble out of belief, but it's almost impossible to stumble out of community. You have to make an intentional decision. I'm changing my number, I'm changing my address, don't call me anymore, leave me anymore, leave me alone. This is what I'm planning and want to do. Parents, as a parent, three teenagers, just sent one off to college, I'm telling you. This is strong. This isn't the Bible. This is just Andy speaking. You are crazy. You are missing the opportunity of a lifetime. You are crazy if you don't have your children plugged in to a small group, your middle schoolers plugged into a small group, and your high schoolers plugged into a small group. But I'm telling you, by the time they hit 10th grade, if they're not plugged in, it's almost impossible to get them plugged in. Not because it's our fault, but because you haven't helped them lay the groundwork for their future. You're crazy. Because when your kids stumble, you know this, they're not going to listen to you. Who are they going to listen to? Pity the 10th grader. Pity the 11th grader. Pity the senior in high school that when they stumble, there's no one there to help them stand back up. This isn't a peripheral. This isn't an and. This is essential. That's why we say circles, they are more important than rows. Now, if that doesn't convince you, let me try one more thing. Imagine this. Imagine the difference in your family of origin, some of you, not all of us, but some of you. Imagine the difference it might have made if your father had had a group of men he was doing life with that shared your family values, and when he stumbled, they decided, we're not gonna let you lay there and we're not going away till you get back up. We're not gonna let you medicate your way out of this family. We're not gonna allow you to affair your way out of this family. Imagine how much different your life growing up might have been for some of you. Or imagine if your parents as a couple had been in relationships like I'm talking about. And when things got bad at home, and when he thought about leaving and she thought about leaving, what if they'd been surrounded by people who have like-minded people who said, okay, we'll pay for the counseling. We'll pick you up and take you to counseling. We're not going to let this marriage fall apart, and we're not going to be that friend that says, yeah, you ought to go ahead and leave him, and yeah, it'll work out, and honey, I understand. We're not just going to be empathetic. We're going to say, no, 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 no. We're going to fight for your marriage even when you don't have the energy to. Imagine if your parents had had those kinds of relationships around them so that when they stumbled out of church, out of faith, out of love, there had been somebody there, a group of people to say, okay, you may not make it, but we're going to do everything in our power to ensure that you do. Hey, what if you'd had that when you were in the 10th grade? What if there'd been a group of, what if there had been other adult voices in your life when you were in high school? Because you weren't going to listen to mom and dad. They were idiots. I mean, they're the smartest people who ever lived now. But when you were 16, it's like, that's all you said, ladies. That was your whole communication. You rolled your eyes and walked off, you know? And guys, you just had a bad attitude because they're your parents. I get that. Listen, what if you had had other adult voices in your life that you trusted, that you thought were cool, that you could identify with, and they came along beside you when you stumbled and they said the very same things your parents said, but for some reason, when it came to that group, you had ears to hear and you had eyes to see what you could not see, that your parents. Can you imagine how much different your life would have been? Or when you were in college, if you'd had that kind of accountability and that kind of structure? Hey, for some of you, you've gone through a first marriage, you're on a second one, or you're in between, and you think back about that first marriage, and a lot of it was your fault, or maybe almost none of it was your fault. What if your ex-husband or your ex-wife had had the kinds of relationships we're talking about, that as they begin to stumble, and honey, I'm going to go out dancing with my friends, and you're like, oh, dancing with your friends? Oh, no, you can't go out dancing with your friends. I'm going to go, and you're thinking, I tried to tell her no, and she's leaving me with the kids. I don't know where to turn, because all her friends have lost their mind just like she is. What if you'd been in a kind of group where there were other ladies that could have gone to your wife and said, hey, dancing with your friends without your husband, bad idea. You say, well, it may not have saved my marriage. It may not have. But pity, Solomon says, pity the person. That when the inevitable stumbling blocks come that Jesus talked about, pity the person, they trip and they fall, and there's no one who has the relationship there to make sure once they're down, they don't stay down for the count. This is why we are group crazy. We spend more money on groups than any other church in America. In fact, my friends who are pastors, they say, groups don't work. We've given up on groups. I'm like, we're never giving up on circles. We are never, ever giving up on circles. It is not about rows. It is about life to life, doing life together, opening God's word together, praying for each other, stumbling through life together, having babies together, tracking down, you know, husbands and wives together, praying through prodigal children together. I mean, raising money together, paying for things. We're never giving up on circles because stumbling blocks are going to come. And sitting in rows when you stumble is worthless because you won't come sit in this row. There's got to be somebody who loves you so much, who is so connected to you that they feel comfortable standing beside you and saying, you're not going to be that one. You are not going to be that one. No one's going to say pity him because there was no one there to stand beside him and do everything they could to lift him back up. And you know, while I'm on this, I just got to say this and I'll wrap it up. I look around this room and I can't make eye contact or I'll get too emotional, but there's some people in these first 5 and 6 rows in this auditorium who I know you have done this for other people. I know your story. You did interventions. You rounded up the community group and you went and knocked on the door and said, we're coming in, we're not letting you get away. You've raised money for people who needed counseling in your community group. They couldn't pay for counseling. You said, that's not going to be an excuse. You are going to counseling. We'll pay for it. You've done all kinds of things. You have sacrificed so much time and energy in order to say, while you're down, we're not going away. And you've seen the power of this. And you know sitting in rows in church just doesn't do that. And so many of you give your time on Sunday afternoon to Inside Out. And you give your time on Sunday morning to be back there with those kids. And we promote you with those kids. And by the time they're in the 5th grade, you feel like they're your kids. And now they have an adult voice in their life. And I'm telling you, it makes all the difference in the world. Because stumbling blocks are inevitable. Impossible it is for them not to be there. The question is, who's going to be there with you and who's going to be walking with you when they come? Because pity the person who stumbles and there's no one there to help lift them back up. We have all kinds of groups, starting point groups. We're about to start some new groups in October, access groups. We've got, in fact, this is just to give you the number, not that you care, but I'm so proud of our groups, people. We passed a big milestone this year. If you count all the groups, we don't count preschoolers as groups, just age-graded children, all of our campuses, all our strategic partners, all of our life lessons over lunch groups, and all of our international partners, we passed the 40,000 mark this year of people in groups all over the world in our network. 40,000, I'm not asking you to clap. Wait. 40,000 people. That's not how many people go to church. We don't even keep that record. We count it, but that's not what we brag about. Over 40,000 people and children connected in circles. That's absolutely incredible. That's what a big deal it is. The primary kind of group we have around here, most of you know, it's called a community group. Community groups are for adults, singles and couples. Meet for about 2 years. Then we ask you to invite some other people in and form a new group. We have a very systematic way of doing that, very structured. We let you pick your own curriculum. You're going to have a coach. You meet in homes. You meet when you want to, 3 or 4 times a month. Sandra and I have been doing this longer than this church has been in existence. That's what a big deal it is to us and how much we believe in it. And we want you in a small group of some sort. Some of you have groups that aren't connected to this church. As long as you're in a group, you're fine. We just want you walking with someone. But if you're not, and we want to plead with you not to miss this next season, to get in a group. The way that we connect people in group is through GroupLink. I'm going to let our campus pastor come in just a minute and tell you about that. If you are in a group and you took the summer off like we do, then go ahead and make those calls. Make sure you are functioning back in the saddle before Labor Day, or the life, gets going and it gets away from you. If you've been in a group in the past and had a bad experience, so what? You had a bad haircut, didn't quit getting haircuts. You went to a bad doctor. You just found a new doctor. Bad things happen all the time. Put on your big boy pants and come back to GroupLink and get in a group, okay? About 87% of our groups are awesome. About 12%, people don't have a great experience. So what? We're human. Don't give up on this because you had one bad experience. And every time somebody talks to you about group, you love to tell your story. Well, back in 1987, I was in a group. And then it's like, oh, who cares? Okay. So grow up. All right. So this is how important it is. We want you in circles, because at the end of the day, when those stumbling blocks come, and they're going to come, and when you're down, we want someone to be there to help you stand.